You are listening to another episode of the Two Daft Yanks podcast. I am your host, Chad Smith. Greetings to you wherever you may be. And let's bring in the angry wolf, Mr. Corey Chatelain.
Yeah, tonight's episode probably going to be a little bit ranty because of the subject matter. And my second bowl of jambalaya isn't sitting well, so I'm a little feisty as it is. So yeah, it might get a little ranty in here tonight.
Did you seriously have some jambalaya?
Yes, I did.
Right. Did you make it yourself?
Yes, but I cheated. It was the box mix. So.
Oh, okay. Zatarain's or someone else?
Well, I declined to answer since I don't want to upset my friend who owns a competing company.
Okay, let's not do that then. So, all right, folks, welcome to the show. One topic show tonight. Trying to stay current on the current events. And tonight's show, as you said, could get a little off the rails, but we're going to make some great points, I think. So let's just dive right into it, Corey. In the past on the show, we've talked about the UEFA Nations League and how we thought it was a good idea. Hey, Europe's going to get rid of friendlies. And then we thought, hey, how is this going to impact the rest of the world?
Did we think it was a good idea?
Well, I did.
Okay. Yeah, I don't. Okay.
Maybe I won't say we. Sorry.
Yeah, no, because I don't like the idea because, yeah, which many of the reasons we'll get into. But, yeah, finish your monologue.
Finish the introduction here.
Yes, all sorry. This.
Then I said, well, then, heck, if Europe is going to do this, not play friendlies anymore, then the United States and CONCACAF, Mexico, et al., needed to find a way to be able to fill that vacuum. If Europe was going to be available, and I proposed a partnership with South America doing the same type of thing. Now, that technically could still happen, but what's happening now is, now I caught wind of this a couple days ago. BBC had an article saying, hey, UEFA's talking to FIFA about expanding the Nations League to a global level. And I was like, okay, interesting. Thinking that, you know, we wouldn't hear more about this for another maybe, you know, a couple weeks, maybe a couple months, maybe sometime next year. But no, a few days later, there's reports left and right saying this thing's about to be officially announced. And people even speculating that the CONCACAF version of this would start as early as September of 2018.
Which would be next year.
Yes, this is 2017. That's 2018. So this is coming up really, really fast. We're going to spend some time here talking about the concept of this Nations League, why it's happening, why it's good or bad for football, and all that other fun stuff. So I'll just throw this out there. Now, I think this is – the idea on the surface may sound good in Europe, right, just because you got some of the best teams in the world there. It would also work in South America, but the problem I see with this already, just problem A – of a list of many problems is it hasn't even started yet. They don't even know if it's going to be popular, if it's going to work, even in Europe. But before that, they're going to try to expand it to fit the entire globe. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't like the idea at all because it's being pushed as making the friendlies meaningful when I'm pretty sure I was the jackass or the asshole before that. I want less international soccer, not more. So I don't care that the friendlies are not meaningful at the moment because I don't really care for the friendlies because I'm one of the people. I'm the main person in this duo that, you know, pushed the club over country thing first. So to me, the club always comes first because that's what I like about the sport, not how most people, especially in the States, seem to backdoor into soccer is through the national team. I mean, even though, admittedly, my first taste of soccer / football was through the World Cup.
Hypocrite!
No, it's not a hypocrite when you change your – when you're –
I know.
Yeah. It's not a, you're only a hypocrite when you say one thing and do the other knowingly. You're not a hypocrite when you change after, you know, getting more evidence.
Ah, you're just like that Onion article today. Coward changes opinion after learning more facts.
Yeah, which much, much like many of the Onion's jokes, it's a, you know, it's a multi-layered, and the joke is actually not about the person they're talking about, but the person reading it, which most people don't realize. But anyway.
You're a coward.
Yeah, it's just a money grab. It's going to clutter the already, you know, concentrated fixture list. It's going to lead to more injuries. It's going to lead to, you know, them jacking up the rights fees and everything and tournament fees and all this other stuff. And like I said, like most things through authoritation, excuse me, authority institutions, it's being marketed as one thing when it's really about forcing something on you, hoping you buy it and make the people pushing it some money.
Yeah, it is definitely a massive money grab. And I think it's Infantino's way, who is basically Sepp Blatter 2.0, as we pointed out long ago. It's his way of pumping more money into the smaller nations. Because remember, in FIFA, everybody's vote is equal, which is kind of insane if you think about it. And so even in some of the articles we just read one from Yahoo, and it said a big part of this is to be able to distribute money to some of these smaller countries, which is what they're already doing, and that's how FIFA ensures their power.
And that's, from a cynical standpoint, that's one of the reasons why I don't like it, is because it's a new way to have the have the de facto bribe money that they were doing, that because of the corruption cases brought against them, they've had to figure out ways to funnel this money to some of these countries, and this is one of those new ways that they've discovered to do that. So yeah, it's going to be pushed as a competitive tournament, when in reality, at least from my cynical point of view, it's a new way to funnel money to certain countries, which, oh, by the way, are probably going to vote for Infantino. So again, it's a way of creating de facto slush accounts to prop up certain people in FIFA. And I'm sure it has nothing to do, coincidentally, because of the bribery cases a couple years ago.
Yeah, and it's
hashtag odd. Sarcasm, of course.
Yeah, and it's odd to me that this news came out, as I said, very slowly, and then it's picking up like a speeding bullet train to the point where we're talking about it. So let's think about this now.
Yeah, so like most legislative stuff, anytime something is rammed down your throat, you know something nefarious or something untowards is probably, you know, tagged to the bill.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions here because, so according to the published reports, and that's all we can go by because nothing official has been announced, but trust me, this stuff isn't coming out by like crack investigative reporting. It's being leaked, and being leaked on purpose.
Yeah.
The idea here is that you would – this I don't even know how it's going to work. It sounds crazy. Yahoo had has an article which we'll link onto the blog. So go to 2daftyanks.com. We'll post all the articles that we've read on this. But the Yahoo one has I guess it's a hypothetical setup for this thing. I don't even understand it. But all you need to know is – so you're going to play these nations leagues. Friendlies are going to go away. International friendlies, you'll play within your confederation for the right to get to another tournament, and they're going to hold this other tournament, which they're labeling kind of a mini World Cup, but it's more of an expanded Confederations Cup, the way I view it. And right. It's going to be in odd even years. So right after the World Cup, which makes absolutely no sense. Again, you're going to clutter the calendar to the point to where, okay, so you're going to have a World Cup, and then you're going to have this Nations League tournament. Then where are you going to put all these continental tournaments? Footballers are going to be playing, if you're playing for a top country, you'll be playing in a major tournament every summer, which obviously is going to lead to more injuries, and they're going to be shocked, I say, when players are breaking down in their late 20s.
Well, yeah, it'll be like the period Spain went through from like 2008 to 2016, where they were playing in a tournament every summer, and some of those players didn't have legitimate summer breaks for almost 6 years.
Yeah, and a lot of them had, guess what? Injury problems. Holy moly, it's almost like your body has to rest. to play at a high level. Wow.
Yeah, and putting it in odd years, again, from a cynical standpoint of view, is another way that you know that it's just a money grab bullshit tournament, because when you put it in the year after the World Cup, you know, the literal year after the World Cup, again, it doesn't even really, because there's just so many things that just don't fit with this thing to me, because you don't even give time. It's almost like they're watering down the World Cup in a roundabout way, because again, if you're going to put what they're kind of pushing is going to be a major tournament the year after the World Cup, you don't even really give the World Cup champions time to kind of bask in their accomplishment, as it were. So like I said, in a roundabout way, it's almost like they're watering down the World Cup. So again, maybe that's going to be one of the unintended consequences, is that they're inevitably going to water down the World Cup. And I don't know, maybe some of the more purists are going to end up ditching international soccer more and more, because it's going to be just so much to keep up with.
Yeah, and if you think about it, by adding this pro rel within the confederations, and even at a global, I'm not sure, it makes it look like even at a global scale, this is going to be, you could bump up and down against different groups. I don't know. It's crazy, the layout that we just looked at. But they're trying to emulate club football, obviously, by doing this.
Yeah, because again, this is another thing where people are probably going to say, oh, well, you're hypocrites because you're pro-rel at the club level. How come you don't like pro-rel at the national level? It's like, okay, well, A, at the club level, inside of one country, you have 10,000 clubs, so you need a way to sort out the wheat from the chaff. At the international level, you only have 200-something nations throughout the entire globe, so the individual confederations' qualifications for the World Cup kind of act as de facto qualifiers to be promoted to the World Cup. So you don't need a global pro-rel system, because the way it's set up is already kind of a de facto system.
It's based on merit still.
Yeah, and even if it wasn't based like that, you wouldn't need it, because, again, you have a system of 200 countries, or 215 countries, whatever it is, and not a system where inside even a tiny country, you're still going to have 600 clubs, and you need a way to figure out who's the best.
So, again, this is just kind of mind-boggling to me. Now, we'll wait for the details, but it doesn't sound good to me. Now, another thing that should make you throw up a red flag, you know, this is a money grab. They mentioned the idea of holding a what they call a minnow, in quotes, World Cup, which is A, disrespectful, and B, shows that they're only a money grab, right? Because they know that these if they hold such an event, fans, people from these smaller countries, will go to the event and they'll pay top dollar to see them play in some, you know, D level or E level competition.
Yeah, and then narrowing the fields into those tournaments, or, you know, quote unquote divisions, you're basically will be excluding the larger pool into smaller pools, which you can then target to jack up the rights fees and the licensing fees within that division. So yes, it may limit costs because they won't be playing in the top division, but they can still raise fees because, well, okay, you want to play in the D tournament and buy the, or, you know, you want to go see the D tournament in whatever, Malaysia or Tahiti or whatever, you know, whoever's going to qualify that. Well, you know, you can raise it 20%. You know, you can raise the tickets 20% because, like you said, the people will want to, you know, at least in theory, will want to go see their team play in that, excuse me, in that divisional tournament. It's sort of like, you know, the bottom tier bowl games. You know, if Boise State or who, you know, whoever, the Southwestern Idaho Tech, you know, Tech for the sexually gifted, if they play in some bottom level ESPN bowl, the people in Maine don't give a shit, but the people in Southeastern Idaho are still going to pay $200 a night for a hotel room to travel wherever the bottom tier bowl game is and drop, you know, $2,000 on a trip to see their team play in the D-level bowl game. So they still get to make money off of those people, even though, you know, the people in California or Texas or whatever don't care.
No, that's a good analogy. Yeah, so the idea that they're pitching this shows that they're trying to make money up and down the ladder. It's the whole goal of this thing. Now, I will say this is a good thing. Now, we're all about competition, and in some ways, it will help some of these countries, right? Because it's going to give them more of an opportunity to play at a higher level of football, and you'll see some quite amazing stories. You'll see some teams that will, over time, get a lot better through this, I believe. That the opportunity to play at a higher level through merit and success will drive them up, much like the country that I covered for in the Gold Cup for These Football Times and wrote an article. Curaçao is a prime example of that. That's the one positive that I could see coming out of this. But again, I don't know if that it isn't, if it was their number one goal, right, is sporting merit and providing opportunities, then sure, maybe you could get on board. But we all know that money is the primary objective here.
Yeah, because again, in other sports, like hockey's got a pro-rel system. But again, you're talking about a much different animal. You know, international hockey is extremely top-heavy. The D-division hockey teams are, you know, they're pulling from a pool of maybe 1,500 players, where the A-level hockey teams are pulling from a pool of, you know, millions or hundred thousands. So, and, you know, obviously hockey is a sport that requires much different facilities, which cost much more money naturally. So I can understand a pro-rel system in a sport like that, where you're trying to limit cost and you have an extremely, large talent gap from the A to the D level, where in soccer, you don't really, yes, you have a big talent gap, but it's not as big in reality as it looks on paper, even though, you know, you do get games where, you know, whatever, Germany plays Gibraltar and they beat them 11-0. Again, that's an exception rather than the rule where, yeah, maybe San Marino has only won two games in 20 years, but the actual talent gap to the top isn't the same as Israel and ice hockey, you know, going against Sweden, where, like I said, Israel might be pulling from a pool of literally 400 players, you know, over the course of 10 years, where Sweden's pulling from a pool of, you know, 2 million or whatever.
Yeah. Well, those are good points. So let's just ask this question here. I'll ask you simply, I'll give you my viewpoint. Is this good for U.S. soccer? Well, the answer is obviously no, in my opinion, because it's basically going to limit us to be playing more games within our federation, which, no offense to the rest of the teams, especially the ones who qualified for the World Cup, because we didn't, but it's going to limit our opportunity to grow. We need to play more games against higher quality competition. And this is going to actually help the bottom of CONCACAF, but potentially hurt Mexico and the United States to drop back down a level, to where I think over time, if this is the system that's in place, you're going to see a lot more parity in CONCACAF.
Well, yeah, and to go back, who's the federation that's pushing this, UEFA, this may be a way of, again, one of the unspoken reasons for this may be, okay, well, if we have to eventually concede some spots in the World Cup, well, this is a way of pushing something where we can maybe qualify more teams out of Europe and charge more money, because we're limiting those promotion relegations within the confederations. And in theory, the European teams would be better because they're doing the same thing, like what you're saying. They're going to be limiting within they're going to be limiting the pools within the confederations. So obviously a weakened CONCACAF, a weakened South America, a weakened Africa helps a traditionally strong UEFA. And maybe that's one of the reasons they're pushing this.
Perhaps. Now, in these, they're going to have a high number of teams in these global tournaments at each tier. So, yeah, they're pushing this to kind of maybe make up for the expanded World Cup. Again, how all this fits, they're just pushing more and more and more. And more and more and more is not good. Just like anything, right? Eat too much ice cream, Your mom said you'll get a stomach ache.
Yeah, because from an actual fan standpoint, this is something that this is one of the problems I have with American sports. It's we have too much. It's like when college football expanded to four nights a week, and my friends were texting me, you know, back in the day. It's like, isn't this great? We have college football four nights a week now. It's like, actually, no, I don't like this. It's like Saturday is for college football. Friday is for high school football. Sunday is for professional football. You know, this is when I still watch football, obviously. And I don't like watching college football on Wednesday because it's crap football usually. So it's one of those that more of a good thing is actually bad because it becomes the watered down thing that becomes average, you know, and that's maybe this is the thing that I come off elitist to some people, but I don't care why I'm a snob. I will never apologize for being a snob or an elitist when it comes to quality, because that's what it's the craft beer thing. When you have good beer, you don't need to drink eight of them because it's such good quality that you only need to drink the two or the three. You don't need the eight shit beers to get buzzed, because that's why you need eight shit beers to get buzzed, because it's crap beer. And you're drinking it to get buzzed and not for the taste.
There we go. I like it. 3-2 beer.
So it's like anything else. It's anything, or, you know, pick another, you know, pop music, anything mass produced is usually crap. Because you have to water it down and try to please everybody rather than your core audience or your, you know, the actual, you know, connoisseurs, as it were. So, like I said, if this makes me an elitist, I don't care. But more soccer is not, at least from my standpoint, is not good, because it inevitably, again, because that's the problem with the friendlies. It's not that the friendlies are boring because they're friendlies. They're actually, because again, that's where I think the UEFA and FIFA are kind of missing the point. They're meaningless not because there's nothing attached to them. They're meaningless because there's just too much international football at the moment. So it's become a thing that for the 2 weeks that the club football isn't being played, you're playing friendlies. So, like I said, it's not that there's no trophy attached to it. It's just that there's just too much of it now, that there's no actual break, so that the international football you do have, you know, it's like, again, it's the McDonald's thing. You're supposed to only have McDonald's, or, you know, you're only supposed to have dessert as a treat, not dessert every day after every meal to where it no longer becomes special.
Yeah, no, you make a lot of great points there. And so,
because again, to me, that's the problem with international football, is that there's just too much football now.
Exactly. And so they're going the opposite way, thinking, okay, well, it's not, they're not trying to blame that there's too much football. They're trying to blame, like you said, that it's meaningless. So now they're going to try to attach meaning to every game, thinking that people are going to care. Well, people, you can't care about every game year round for a 4-year cycle. That's what they're going to ask you to do now.
Yeah. There's a reason why even professional footballers have a month long break. Even things you love, you need a break from sometimes, because your mind, you know, just like you said, with your body, with the rest, your mind needs a break sometimes just to veg out and do nothing, or to do something completely different than what you like, because it just, you know, it's like anything else. If you just because you love something doesn't mean you want to do it every day, at least in my experience. And I think that's where they're making the mistake. And again, maybe they just don't care because they just want to make money. But yeah, to me, that's the problem with international football. It's not that the friendlies are meaningless. There's just too much of it.
We'll wrap up here by having a discussion of what is the end game with this. Now, you brought it up earlier. Again, remember, the players are still controlled by the clubs. If FIFA, UEFA, all these, you know, international and continental confederations are going to keep applying pressure now. Because right now, if there's meaning on every game, if player X is, you know, slightly injured at like PSG, for say, right? And the French team calls him up, and he, you know, in a friendly, you could say, it's a friendly, you know, I have a hamstring knock. I need a rest. Well, now they're going to say, well, I know you're a little bit hurt, but we need this game because it actually means something now. You're going to be asking more and more of the players, which in return is going to ask more and more for the clubs. And I think FIFA, either by design, which is possibility by design, or by sheer stupidity, is going to force us into the ultimate nightmare scenario, which is your breakaway European league outside of the reach of FIFA.
Yeah, which I think is actual, excuse me, is actually one of the end goals, is to force that breakaway league. And because again, that's one of the things that I think, even simple things like, okay, well, if the club has the contract with Adidas and the national team is contracted with Puma, well, the Puma team might want to take, or might want to force the Adidas guy to play because, well, we have the contract with the national team and the national team has the game and we need to make money on the TV rights. So you got to force the guy to play, and the club might be, well, he's an Adidas player, we don't want to send them. So all, you know, this stuff brings up all sorts of little squabbles that I mean, in reality, like most authority, they don't act, you know, they don't care. Cause again, they're just going to take the position of, well, we're the authority, but you know, there's all sorts of little squabbles like that that are going to come out of this that I don't think a lot of people are going to realize until it happens. Because, you know, you already got, you know, pretty good animosity between some clubs and the international federations. And, you know, what was it, 3 summers ago, FIFA threatened to take a bunch of the clubs to that, what is it called, the CAS, the the Court for Sport Arbitration. Yeah. They threatened to take them over potential boycotts of the national team. So again, this is probably going to, you know, bring some more of those cases to bear, or force some of those cases to happen almost.
And they will, because the clubs are going to say, "Hey, my player, our players, if you're playing at the top level,
yeah, they're the ones holding the contracts." So
yeah, and their players aren't going to get a summer off for maybe 3 or 4 years in a row now, which is not sustainable. The clubs still hold a lot of the cards. And I think this will eventually, if this goes as people are saying it will, it's going to force the clubs to do something drastic to get out of under the thumb of FIFA. And I don't see any way but this massive a European Super League or even a global Super League forming, where they say, no, we're not going to send our players to you to play every summer in some tournament. It's a problem, I think.
Yeah, because again, the only compromise that I think could work with that is that if somehow they have to sign some secondary contract with the national team. And again, maybe that's one of the end goals, to where they can then turn around and jack up the TV rights. Because again, at the end of the day, the player has contracts through the club. So from a legal standpoint, I don't see, other than, you know, if there's some sort of exemption clause in the EU that we don't know about, that if this were to ever go to court, how the national teams or FIFA could win. Because again, the clubs are the ones who hold the contracts. So the asset, you know, the asset in legal terms is owned by the clubs that the national teams basically rent or lease. So even though they pay the insurance on that asset when they rent the asset, you know, they're not actually paying that club for that rental of the assets. So like I said, if this ever goes to court, I don't see how FIFA or the national associations could win legally, other than, you know, if there's some sort of exemption that we don't know about. Because like I said, at the end of the day, it's the club that actually holds the contract for the player. So
I was going to say, I do believe in many cases there is some compensation the club gets, but it's very, very minor, obviously. When we're talking about, you know, players who are making over $100,000 a week, they're not getting a lot in return when the players are rented, as you say.
Oh, yeah, and obviously in any other business, if they're going to be rented more, that fee would go up. So the fee, so there's just on the face of it, the national team or FIFA is going to have to pay more money because, again, if there's more games and there's potential for more injury, then obviously that's going to put that club asset at risk. So they're going to want more money because, you know, that's going to potentially ruin the valuation of that player, or it's going to cause, you know, wear down or devaluation, just like any other asset in any other business.
Yeah, and I could see that happening to say, you know, player X is on $100,000 a week, and they'll say, okay, you're going to take him for 3 weeks. We want at least half his salary for those 3 weeks. Pay up, or we're not going to release him. I think that's a reasonable ask.
Yeah, because there again, it's one of those that, you know, 20 years ago, this wasn't necessarily an issue because you had maybe 6 to 8 internationals a year. So it wasn't that big of a deal because, you know, 6 to 8 internationals a year, maybe 20 different players were getting capped. It wasn't that big of a deal. But if you're going to be playing 15, 20, 20, 25 internationals a year, that's literally another season for some players. You know, if they were to play in every game, if you're going to be renting somebody for what amounts to almost a full season, at some point that player is inevitably going to break down, or it's going to cause some sort of devaluation because he's simply being used more, and, you know, time and assets are money. And it's only going to be natural that the clubs are going to want to be compensated for this in some sort of way.
All right. So there we go. So that is kind of a big overview of this Nations League. Again, nothing's official. A lot of stuff has been leaked. It's happening. I know that much.
Well, yeah, there is one official thing, and that is my opinion of this is it's a stupid idea.
There we go. That is official. Ring the bell. If you have a bell, we don't have a bell.
They should just leave international soccer as is. This National League thing is going to be it's not going to be a disaster because, again, people are going to buy into it because you're always going to get those people that just can't get enough. But like I said, to me, that's the problem with international soccer is there's just too much of it already, and this is just going to exacerbate that.
And you mentioned the NFL here in America and even college football, and it's going to be the same, I believe. Like you said, when the NFL started Thursday Night Football, the first couple of years, it was really popular, right? Because it was new. It was a novelty.
Yeah, the novelty, yeah.
But now, it's terrible. It's Thursday Night Football. It's being played right now, I think, as we're recording this. I don't even know who's playing. I don't care because it's like watching, like, it's a quality of like a junior high JV squad because, again, as we just mentioned to keep the theme, the players, they don't have the time to rest. You can't play on Sunday and then play Thursday as a professional footballer and be at 100%. That's impossible. It's impossible. And you're going to ask, again, you're going to ask these professional soccer players to basically play year-round.
Well, yeah, because
again, 3 or 4 year stretches. You're going to end up with the same thing. At first, I think this will be very popular, but in 4 or 5 years' time, it will be a noose around the neck of FIFA.
Well, yeah, because there again, to use the NFL as another example, even though we both are, you know, at least for me, you know, I can't stand the NFL these days, but there again, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, you didn't have the problem of guys sitting guys in the last 2 or 3 games to rest up for the playoffs. Well, the more you play them in these different, you know, these different night games and open them up to potential injury because they're playing on short weeks, well, from a logical standpoint, I can't blame guys for sitting guys anymore, especially when they're making so much more money nowadays. Because there again, what that really is they're doing what we were just talking about. People may not like it because, oh, well, they should always play because, you know, for the competition's sake. Well, from a business standpoint, they're protecting their asset because why play in two meaningless games when the meaningful game, the playoff game is 2 weeks from now? I'm protecting my asset because that game 2 weeks from now means something. So the asset needs to be at top, you know, tip top shape 2 weeks from now. And I can't risk him in these two games. And that's why they do it now.
Yeah. And the biggest problem for another American sports example is everybody knows about the NBA where they're resting players on purpose. Stars are sitting out games on purpose. And of course everybody's whining and crying because, you know, little Jimmy, you know, for his birthday, got a ticket to go see LeBron. But, hey, sorry, little Jimmy. LeBron's not playing tonight. He needs a rest.
Yeah, and that all has to do with, again, they make so much money now. Teams, it's only natural. And, again, I'm not saying this – I'm not blaming them.
No.
Because, again, they're only doing what we're talking about. They're just protecting their assets. They're protecting the valuation and the safety. Or, you know, maybe safety is a strong word, but you know what I mean. They're protecting the value and the – the overall health of their player.
Okay, so clubs are going to want to do the same thing. Happen
with this is the point.
Exactly. Very good analysis, I would say. Protect your assets, right?
Yes. Yes.
Always.
Yeah, I once got a detention for pulling that bit in class.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah. For saying assets.
Oh, boy. That does not surprise me.
Yeah, well, you know, even in fifth grade, I was a little pisser, so.
Was this at a Catholic school, too, at that point in time? Or no?
Christian school, even worse, Christian school.
Oh, Christian school, okay.
Yeah. Baptist-run Christian school.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, that's why. I'm surprised they didn't beat you down with a ruler.
Yeah, no, that was the Catholic schools with the ruler.
Yeah. So the UEFA Nations League is going to be a smashing success now that we've just raked it over the coals. Infantino is probably going to be a big success for him. He'll become immortal and more powerful than Blatter, and it's going to be great.
Yeah, because there again, you could argue this is something that maybe he's trying to institute, you know, just to try and lay down a legacy right off the bat.
Oh, yeah. I have no doubt of that. And put some more money into the coffers. You know, FIFA's only got a couple billion lying around in the bank. So they need a little more money now that their bribes and their slush fund has been kind of shut down. Thanks to the FBI, I guess.
Yeah, well, and like I said, that's pretty much what we said at the beginning of the show. It's a new way to it's the new slush fund operation, basically. At least that's one of the takeaways for me.
All right. Well, if this United Nations League gets going, I think we need a Boutros Bali FC.
Yeah.
Make it happen.
Yeah, I might actually be interested in that. I used to like me some Boutros Ghali.
Come on, you Boutroses, or I don't know.
Yeah, but you know, he was like New York. He must have been so nice they named him twice.
All right, boys and girls, if you have thoughts on the United Nations League, actually, it's just the Nations League. I keep calling it the United Nations League as mocking it and the United Nations because they're all jokes. But yeah, if you have thoughts, track us down on Twitter at 2DaftYanks. And as I mentioned last time, I said, you know what? We've been off the air for a little bit. I bet there's some new podcasting platform that we need to get on. And sure enough, there was, Corey. Google, through their Android platform, has one. So we are now on the Google Play Music Store. You could go to 2daftyanks.com and get the link. Or I'm sure you could just go to Google Play Music and type in 2daftyanks. And it's free. You'll be able to download the podcast onto your Android device. And of course, as always, we're on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and what's the other one? TuneIn Radio, and all kinds of other services. So if you can't find us online, you're not trying hard enough because we're literally everywhere, just like international football is about to be. It's going to be everywhere.
Well, there you go. I'll recant everything I said if they throw us $3 million and, you know, make us a sponsor.
Yeah, we'll sponsor it. We'll talk good about it. Send us some money, Infantino. Yeah, we'll live podcast every damn match.
Yeah.
For enough money.
Oh, now I'm in.
Yeah. So, all right, boys and girls. Well, you enjoy the international break. We certainly won't because there's really nothing to talk about. So, we'll be back at some point when more big news breaks, when there's something to talk about, which could be tomorrow. Hell, you don't know in this crazy world of ours. So for Corey Chatelain, I'm Chad Smith, saying thank you very much for listening to this emergency United Nations League podcast.
Hashtag money grab.
This has been the 2 Daft Yanks podcast. If you like the show, be sure to find the Yanks at 2daftyanks.com or at 2daftyanks on Twitter. There, you can stay up to date on all the 2 Daft Yanks action by subscribing to the show.